joins us. Tommy, how you doing?
Good. I'm still laughing at the Wangmeister. Nicely done.
This is a true story about Dr. Wang. So
okay.
I've known Dr. Wang going back before he was OTR because he used to bartend at a bar. I don't even on the south side, White Mud Crossing. It was called the Druid down there for a bit. That's what the
name was.
And so that's where I'd first got to know him from Carius. And so we hung out with him, and I got introduced to him as Dr. Wang. Right. Now, keep in mind that Dr. Wang is Asian. So I just assumed, you know, young guy, everybody calls him Dr. Name. I'm a nickname guy, right? So, it's Dr. Wang. So I used to call him Dr. Wang or just Wang, whatever. So this, you know, I've probably known him for 2 or 3 years. So one night I'm out, and somebody comes up to me and they introduce him. Oh, you Jason. Yeah. How you doing? So we're talking. He's like, oh yeah, you know, my good friend James. And I'm like, I'm kind of like, geez. Oh, Jesus. I met some people, but I'm like, James. Said, yeah, man, I'm not sure. He goes, yeah, James Durr. And I'm like, yeah, sorry, man, I don't know James Durr. And then he just kind of starts tearing into me, like, what are you talking about? Like, you're good friends, and why are you being a jerk? I'm like, seriously, dude, I don't know who you're talking about. Who's James Durr? Like, where does he work? What does he do? He's like, well, he works down at the Druid. And I'm like, Dr. Wang? His name's James Durr? And I was dying. Like, literally, almost got in a fight over it because he was getting, I'm like, dude, I don't know a James Durr. I've never met a James Durr. And so that's Dr. Wang's real name. So, yeah, if you go up to Wang and call him James Durr, you'll probably be even – I bet you – trust me, I wasn't the only one. There's lots of people like, who? What – yeah, well, goes by the Wang. That's when you know your nickname's cool, is that most people don't even know your real name.
I did not know he was James Durr until just now. And
there Dr. you go. Wang, see, exactly.
That's how
would anybody know that?
To me. Right.
Well, of course, yeah.
He's fun. He's an awesome guy. And we had cooler pops with him when we went out a couple years ago. And, James Durr, to me, he's Dr. Wang. Always has been.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Like, he'd rather be Dr. Wang than James Durr. James Durr just doesn't have the respect that a Dr. Wang has. Like, right now, Jonas Korpisalo would be the equivalent of James Durr to me. Because I'm amazed at how many people think Jonas Korpisalo is a starting goaltender in the NHL. Like, based on what?
Ooh.
He has a .901 save percentage in 4 years. How's that? If that's a starting goaltender, your team's not good.
Yeah, not reassuring. And I know you and Frank talked about it. And, of course, Kenny Holland's going to try to explore his options and see what he can do with the Koskinen contract. But Korpisalo, good point. I mean, and last year was a disaster in Columbus. Let's not kid ourselves. It got so bad that even in their post-game press conferences, they were calling themselves out. So that name, when you look at Korpisalo and those statistics, the track record, not really taking the number one job by the reins and running with it ever, truly, but just kind of here and there, a little bit streaky, and then goes cold, totally understandable. So, yeah, the James Durr of goalies, if you want to describe it that way. Absolutely. So, the other thing, too, Gregs, was when you guys were talking about the price point and the ask, to me, that was pretty astronomical. Like a first Samarukov and then something else on top of that. Like, come on. That is, like, I know that the Oilers aren't in a position of strength in this scenario, but that's a bit much. And I'm using a huge understatement there by saying that's a bit much.
Yeah, it's way too much. Like, if you were going Korpisalo for Koskinen straight up, Edmonton might have to add in a mid-round pick to make up the $1.7 million difference. But that's about it, right? Like, Koskinen in 3 years actually has better numbers overall. Now, and that's when he's getting overplayed too, because we know that, you know, down the stretch, he was good after Cam Talbot got traded for like the first month. But then, because he started 25 of 27 games, for the last 15 games that season, he had like an .884 save percentage and a .351 goals against average because he couldn't do it, right? Like, it's hard to be a starting goaltender every year. Now, he did, you know, improve his conditioning and training, and then he came back in 19-20. And in 34 starts, kind of split duty, Smith had 37, Koskinen had 34. Koskinen had a .917 save percentage, which is fine. Right? He's still not worth $4.5 million because it was split duty, but at least that was good. Obviously, this year was tough. He had to play too much off the start because Smith got hurt. He also, the one thing that doesn't get talked about, Koskinen came to camp like the very last day because his wife and kids weren't able to come. He didn't get to see his wife and kids for 3 months. And any dad out there will tell you, you don't get to see your kids for 3 months. I don't care who you are. That's going to weigh on you. So how much of it? I don't know. But I do. I can never overlook and just completely discount the human element of life. They're still human beings, right? Too often, I think we forget that sports athletes are human. And as a father myself, like, I'm telling you, that would, like, I've turned down opportunities simply because I'm like, I don't want to work out of town. I don't want to do it. It's not, that's my choice. So, and that's even doing it temporarily, Leo, you know, where you're on the road a bit and you still come home. To go 3 months and to not get to see your kids, like, I'm sorry. That would suck. Now, hey, Mike Smith did it, right? And he was fine. So but just because one person's able to accept it and do well in it doesn't mean that the other person is. And I'm not saying that that's the reason, because I know Koskinen, even if his kids were here, if he's getting overplayed, he's not good. He's not good being overplayed. Yep. But, I just think the Oilers right now, I get that it's not an ideal situation. That's totally fair. But don't panic and reach for something just to get rid of the 4.5. They're better off to stand pat now that they couldn't get Kemper and just go through the season. And you know what? Maybe Koskinen can have shades of 2019-20. And if not, at the deadline, then you can move him, because teams historically every year, they'll take a guy. Like, remember when the Oilers threw in Sam Gagner at the trade deadline because they needed to free up cap space, right, to make the deal work? That happens all the time. So, yes. And you don't have to grossly overpay to make it happen either.
Yeah, the options are there. I'm sure they're going to keep the lines of communication open. When he played those 25 in a row, remember how reluctant they were to even start Anthony Stolarz? That's a tough ask for a season that year certainly completely went off the rails at that point. Tough situation, but I'm sure that this will be something that gets explored. Who knows when it happens? It's a good point, a good reminder. Don't hit the panic button. I think we all get caught up in the rush of free agent frenzy. Things get close. You hear things. You know that there's discussions happening. It's understandable. The excitement level goes through the roof, but now we're kind of getting into that mellow point. Something might pop up. It could. And that ask at the end of the day, that's a tad bit too much. And by tad, I mean that's a lot too much to be asking for that for a Mikko Koskinen trade.
Tom Gazzola joins us at Edmonton Sports Leader TSN 1260. Tommy, big day in Major Leagues of Baseball. The Jays, they acquire a legit starter. Now, it costs them two highly touted prospects, but Berrios under contract for the remainder of this season and next. Do you think the Jays, with getting hand yesterday to shore up the bullpen, can they make a run this year, or are these trades more for next season?
I think this year, it seems like that's the goal with the offensive firepower, the young guns coming into their own, Vladdy having this all-world MVP season. I think they're wrapping up for this year. And, you know, as of yesterday, they were 4.5 games back. They absolutely dismantled the Bo Sox yesterday as well later in the day. So I'm guessing, Gregs, that their mindset is they're going to take a run at this as we head into August and September, and they feel that they can. And obviously, the bullpen's been an issue. Brad Hand, if he's going to come in, help that out somewhat. Berrios comes in. If that helps the starting rotation, maybe you bump a guy back a little bit. If they feel that this was the key and it was as simple as the pitching, which, you know, the indicators look like it was all season long, then yeah, this year, they make a run for it. And I don't know if when I read the Jays thinking of themselves as contenders is like, are they full of themselves or is this legitimate? Is it as simple as a couple of minor tweaks to propel them? And the proof will be in the pudding now that they did get some help. Management went and got a couple of arms. Let's see. I like the idea of going for it, taking advantage of the guys that you do have. And if you do feel that there's an opportunity to make a run, yeah, take it. Because we all know windows of opportunity, they close as quickly as they open at times. And I know the Jays have been building up to this for a little while since the couple of postseason runs that they had, what, 5-6 years ago now. So, yeah. Gregs, I'll go with they're gonna make a run at it this year, and if it leads to a better season next year, fantastic. But make a run of it right now.
I think at some point you got to stick your foot in the water. I think everybody realizes the Jays have tons of offense. They have tons of bats. Yeah. Now their defense can improve a little bit. I think it's getting better at times. They just need to improve their pitching. They got a legit starter, and they could have four legit starters for next year. right? That's intriguing for Toronto. And I don't think their bats are all just on hot streaks. I think they're like legit offensive players. So, you know, this is a team that should be competitive. Now, going up against the Yankees, who seem to have a bottomless pit of money, and Boston, obviously, you know, even Tampa Bay, they don't have the bottomless pit, but they got a lot of good talent. That's the challenge for the Jays. They're probably in the toughest division in baseball, which is the biggest challenge, right? It's the only division that has four teams that at a 5-15 winning clip. Right. So I think they're the only, well, the West also has, four teams with 51 wins, but, LA's played three more games than Toronto. At this point, they're just a 500 team. So their AL West is pretty competitive as well. But you almost have to keep up with the AL East right now. Otherwise, you're going to be like Baltimore and not have a sniff.
Yeah. It ceases to amaze me. The bottomless pit of money, as you alluded to, that the Yankees and the Red Sox have, and they don't mind the luxury tax, and they just continue to go to the well, because let's not kid ourselves too. Baseball is a license to print money. Like, you'll hear these owners cry foul. We saw the saga of the CBA last year and how ridiculous it got. These guys make tons of money owning these franchises, especially in Boston and New York. So that's a tough division. It always will be, especially when those teams can spend the cash that they do.
Tommy Gazzola joins us in Edmonton Sports Theater, TSN 1260. Tommy, the final rosters are set. Do you have any more insight on the CFL, or are you just like me? Because I got asked the other day to put in who I think is going to win the West and the five teams.
Right.
And I'm not going to lie, this was my answer, and not even a joke. I said number one, Winnipeg. Number two, no clue. Number three, unsure. Number four, best guess. Number five, any of the other four. With no preseason and no games in 21 months, I have no idea, which is why I'm excited to watch, because to me, like, I think Winnipeg, and I picked them one because, hey, the champs, I'll give them the respect. After that, it's wide open, man.
Yeah. I have no clue what's going to happen this season. I kind of floated that to Marshall Ferguson earlier today, and I said, okay, instead of just ranking it, who do you think disappoints this year, and who do you think surprises this year? And Marshall went with BC with the potential to surprise. Michael Riley, a motivated player coming back this year after a tough start with the Lions, or return to the Lions, if you will. The passing of his mom motivating him. Very sad story there. Of course, you saw his parents down at Commonwealth pretty much every game day. Very cool to see. So Marshall went with BC as the surprise team. And then Greg's, he went with Winnipeg as the disappointment, only because they are the defending champs. And if they don't repeat or have a really, really competitive season and look like a contender about to repeat, then that would be a disappointment. And then basically everything else is a toss-up. And I'm there with them. Like, you're seeing big names get released. You're seeing guys, Vontae Diggs gets released one day, picked up by the Argos the next day. Guys are moving around. We're seeing all these names that we expect to be stars in the league, and they're being bounced from their respective teams. I'm not sure where this is going to go. These guys haven't played ball in 2 years. I know some of them played in the spring league a little bit. I don't know what to make of that league, Gregs, to be honest with you. So I think it's anybody's ball game this year. That Grey Cup, we could be talking about maybe a Toronto team winning it. Could Ottawa rebound after a horrific season in 2019? What do the Elks look like this year? It's going to be this drama unfolding before our eyes. So I don't know. I like the way you described it, though. Who knows? Not sure. Best guess. It's going to be a toss-up, I think.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to see. And unfortunately, it might be a little bit of a battle of attrition earlier. We've seen, nine or 10 players already out with Achilles injuries this season. And now there's been no preseason games, Tommy. So you can practice hard, but every professional athlete will tell you that the games are just, your emotions higher. There's more ferocity. There's obviously more hits. And I wonder how the players are going to react and how their bodies are going to react to once they get into those punishing hits and see, which teams. I think if you can get out of the first 3 weeks without any major injuries, that's going to be a big key.
Good point. Good point. Health obviously was a concern at the start of training camps before they even opened up. Those Achilles injuries in Saskatchewan, absolutely insane. And, maybe it will be just a test of – of how durable these teams are. I know injuries always play a factor, but Gregor, I mean, these first few weeks, especially without having played in 2 years, are going to be fascinating beyond belief.
Tommy, have yourself a great weekend. Connor Halley wanted me to pass on Monday morning at 2 a.m. because you'll probably be out late Sunday night. You can watch Canada-U.S. in the semifinal of women's soccer.
Fantastic. Steph LeBay, big save today.
Big save. Buddy, you kidding me? It was huge. Huge. I love the reaction. It's fantastic. Have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You too, Gregs.